Okay. So we'll move on to our next case, Campbell versus the Forest Preserve. Mr. Pernica?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Anthony Pareika. I represent the appellant David Campbell. Judge, we're here today to ask this Court to reconsider the District Court ruling and to allow Mr. Campbell to be included in all persons as described under 42 U.S.C. Section 1981. If the Court fails to enforce the amendment to the statute by the United States Congress in 1991, the Court will be enforcing an inequality and depriving David Campbell of his due process under the law. The civil rights statutes allow for a right to be free of racial discrimination in employment, a right held by all persons under 42 U.S.C. 1981. The District Court's application in this case of Section 1983 and failure to recognize the amendment by the United States Congress, which was adopted into law, of 1981, 42 U.S.C. 1981.
But the problem is 1981 doesn't have a remedy provision. And the Supreme Court has become very reluctant to, implying a remedy, in this, a private remedy, private right of action in a statute that doesn't explicitly authorize it.
Well, as Your Honor is aware, what we're asking here today is that this Court overruled the United States Supreme Court
ruling. You're not responding to my point. My point is the Supreme Court has become hostile to private rights of action that are not, explicit in the statute. So 1981 doesn't seem to have its own remedy.
I believe, Judge,
have some other remedial vehicle like 1983.
I believe that the Congress, in amending the Civil Rights Act in 1991, intended to remedy the situation raised by the Court.
Why didn't it create a private right of action? It was certainly clear by 1991 that the Supreme Court had turned sharply against, the Court versus Ash line of cases, where the Supreme Court used to be very willing to imply private rights of action in regulatory statutes, and then it changed. Now it doesn't. So wouldn't Congress have been aware of that in 1991, or someone would have told it, you better add a cause of action here, or else...
I believe Congress was aware, Judge, and I believe that was the reason that it enacted the amendment in
91. Look, before that amendment, if you look at A and B of 1981, those had to be enforced under 1983 because there wasn't any 1981 cause of action. Well, why would adding C change that requirement? Do you think A and B now can also be... the basis of a cause of action?
I think that the C2 under 1981.
Just C or A and B also?
C2 in particular. Pardon? C2 where it talks about, quote,
well,
the rights protected
C
by this
why
section.
Why not A and B?
Because Congress, in amending that section, talked about the impairments under the color of state law, which was a.
Well, what's the indication that Congress wanted people complain about violation of C not to be subject to 1983 as the procedural mechanism for this?
Because there are
2-year statute of limitations.
There is a distinct difference, as Your Honor is, I'm sure, aware, under the 1981 requirements, burden of proof, statute of limitation period, versus the 1981 burden of proof and the statute of limitation period. And what Congress wanted to do in response
what
to the
what is case, the indication that Congress, in adding C or whatever, wanted to change the statute of limitations.
The indication is the fact that they've amended the Civil Rights Act. That's the indication in response to the Supreme Court case 2 years before.
A case about the statute of limitations?
No, the case about the scope and extent and the differences between the
then
individual...
Then why are you saying that A and B are unaffected? So suits to enforce A and B have to go through 1983, subject to the 2 year statute of limitations, and C not. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that Congress wanted to expand and eliminate the requirements of suing an individual who engaged...
Then why do you say that A and B are still subject to the 2 year statute of limitations?
I'm not saying that. I never said that.
Oh, you think they're now subject to the 4 year statute?
Under 1981, yes.
But they weren't changed in substance with the 91 amendments.
Not in substance, but Congress clearly, in amending the 42 U.S.C. 1981, increased by specific language the statute of limitations to 4 years, rather than leaving it to the state statute, which is really silent in the 1983
section. This is
section
1658?
I believe that is the section. One moment.
So did I hear you say early on that you want us to overrule the Supreme Court?
What I'm asking the court to do is to remedy the district court, Judge Durkin's ruling.
Right, of course, but
right.
To do so, what do we do about the Jett case?
Well, what I'm asking the court to do is to declare here that the Jett case doesn't apply in the same manner because it preceded the congressional amendment. We have a statutory specific language under the amended language that was enacted by the United States Congress, which it has subject matter jurisdiction to do. It has jurisdiction over the civil rights matters, and it chose to amend the act in 1991, which specifically created...
Do you know any court that has done that? Do you know any appellate court that has done what you want?
Yes, Ninth Circuit has done it, and there are cases in this Seventh Circuit that have ruled along the lines of what we're arguing in our brief, Judge.
In the district courts?
Correct.
Is that the reasoning the Ninth Circuit used?
Yeah, essentially they wanted to remove the distinction between an aggrieved individual having the right to bring a cause of action based on racial discrimination when there was an individual actor involved versus a state actor involved. And that's why the language that was included in C2 talks about the impairment under the color of state law, talks about specifically the 4 year statute of limitation that allows individuals who are so aggrieved to bring those causes of action. I believe that 1981 can be, and it has been interpreted to be, a separate cause of action, separate and apart from 1983. They don't have to be brought together. They can be, but it's not required.
Are you familiar with a case from the 11th Circuit, Baker versus Birmingham Board of Education, 531 Fed 3rd at 1336?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. You might want to take a look at it.
Okay.
It comes out your way, but for quite a different reason.
That's all I have, unless you have some other questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pareko. Mr. Thompson?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Hubert Thompson. I represent the Forest Reserve District. Your Honors, I think that the starting point for this analysis, as you pointed out, Your Honor, is the Supreme Court's recent decisions. And particularly, I have in mind the Alexander versus Sandoval case, in which the Supreme Court, that was a 2001 case, in which the Supreme Court emphasized that where the Congress creates new rights, it does not necessarily follow that the Congress has created a new remedy growing out of the same statutory scheme. And I think the Federated case, the Ninth Circuit case, might have come out differently if it had been decided after the Alexander versus Sandoval case. counsel keeps emphasizing that Section 1981 created new rights, and in fact, Section 1981C did not create new rights. The law was exactly the same. What Section 1981C did in terms of emphasizing that 1981 applies to private and public actors the same is simply to ratify what the Supreme Court had already ruled in the Runyon case. And so the Congress was aware of the state of the law, was concerned that the Patterson Supreme Court may have been inclined to overrule Runyon, and wanted to codify that. So they did not create an expansion of the rights. There's nothing different. Prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1981, pursuant to Jett, the 1981 actions against municipalities and governmental entities were subject only could be brought pursuant to 1983. That is the same that happened afterward. And there was nothing in the legislative history and certainly nothing in the express language of the statute to suggest that Congress intended to overrule or change the law as to Jett. Section B, the new section, subsection B, had to do with the Patterson decision, as well as C had to do with the Patterson decision because of the concern with regard to the possibility of Runyon being overruled. McGovern and six of the other seven, all of the circuit courts, with the exception of the Ninth Circuit.
Are you familiar with the 11th Circuit case, the Baker case that I mentioned?
I looked through my notes. I don't see. I'm looking for here.
It's not cited in the briefs.
Oh, if it's not cited in the briefs, I'm not familiar.
Okay.
There's a new 11th Circuit case?
Yeah, it's 2008.
No, I'm not familiar with that. It was. Okay.
The essence of it is, it says that the 1991 amendments create the cause of action under 1983. And because it creates the cause of action pursuant to 1658, the statute of limitations is 4 years.
I'm not familiar with the case.
So what do you think about that?
I would disagree with that because the, as I just said, the Section C, well, I'm sorry. That is correct as to Section B. That is correct as to 1981B, which the Supreme Court in Patterson said there was no cause of action for activity after the initiation of the contract. So sexual harassment, terms and conditions, all of those causes of action were created by 1981. And as a result of the statute 1668, that's a new cause of action after 1990, and therefore that portion, 1981B, does have a four-year statute of limitations. That is correct. As to 1981C, which is what we're discussing here, that is not a new cause of action. That is a cause of action that existed at the time and was not expanded or changed by the new act. And therefore, under the courts that have applied the four-year catch-all statute, that would not be a new, under the Jones versus Donnelly analysis, that would not be a new cause of action. Therefore, that would not fall under the catch-all four-year. That would be under whatever it was prior to that. That's our position, Ledger. I just want to take a moment, Your Honor, to just mention also that in our brief and with the district court below, we emphasize that in addition to the statute of limitations issues, that the complaint in this case did not satisfy Monell, and that the complaint in this case, although it's styled as a discrimination case, did not satisfy the even the minimal standards for allegations of race discrimination. And so we believe for all of those reasons, Your Honor, that the district court was correct in dismissing the case with prejudice. Are there no questions?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Judge. Mr. Paraika, how much time does he have? 2 minutes.
There has been a lot of discussion by Judge Castillo, who looked at this issue in the Seventh Circuit, about the application of the congressional changes under 1981. And Judge Castillo went into some detail to look at the and some care to look at the legislative history. During the debate in 1991, Congress made sure to mention that the purpose behind the amendments was, quote, to respond to recent decisions of the Supreme Court by expanding the scope of relevant civil rights statutes in order to provide adequate protection to victims of discrimination, end of quote. And although 42 U.S.C. 1981 subsection C did not reference JET specifically, that is true, in the congressional record, it was Congress's intent, clear intent, I believe, to codify the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Runyon versus McCrary, a 1976 case, since this particular incident that Mr. Campbell was involved in was post-1991, I believe that the Congress was looking to clarify and expand the protection under the civil rights laws for individuals who were discriminated on the basis of race, regardless of whether it was a private individual or entity or a governmental individual or entity. And those amendments are clearly specified in the legislation itself, which Congress adopted and the courts are to follow, rather than having to go into the legislative nuances and the kind of a penumbra of what the Congress intended. The statute speaks for itself. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Parikh, and we thank Mr. Thompson as well.